Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. Today's episode highlights advocacy and becoming an agent of change. My guest today is Jen Lin. Jen is the mom of a teenage son, Jake, with autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, anxiety disorder, mood disorder, and executive function disorder. Lynn serves on the Commission for People with Disabilities of Montgomery County, All Clear Education Services, the ARC U.S. Diversity Committee, and is the executive director at Up County Community Resources. This former TV news producer speaks and writes uplifting and encouraging stories of living on the spectrum on her blog, The World According to Jake, and is also a published author, adoption advocate, and is active in special needs ministry. Please join me in welcoming Jen Lin. Welcome, Jen.
Boy, you make me sound like I'm very busy.
Well, not as busy as it sounds. I mean, you are quite the seasoned advocate. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. It's just me and my husband, Chris, and our son, Jake, who is 17, almost 18. Oh, man. And yeah, this all has just happened because of Jake. Like, way back in the beginning, I had no idea what to expect or what to do after Jake was diagnosed. So I just, I was lucky enough to be able to just kind of abandon one career and jump into another to learn. Okay. What to do for Jake. And cause I didn't know, I hadn't parented, I hadn't babysat, you know, he's our only child. So, it kind of shifted me into this special needs world. And then I started figuring out how hard it is just to get anything, you know, and why is it so hard? It shouldn't be this hard. Cause our kids have such a hard time just living. Like, why is it so hard to help them speak? You know, like the services should be all over. And I ended up working for an advocate after I was a substitute teacher in special ed for many, many years in the public school and non-public schools. And then I worked for CSAC where I became an ABA technician. So then I was kind of arming myself and learning things as I went. And come around to third grade, we really were having trouble. And I had to hire an advocate. I hired him. Okay. We got our placement. And then after that, he hired me, and that was kind of my doorway into the advocacy and meeting some important people. And I worked for Rich Weinfeld for a few years, and then this job that I have currently came up, which has much more of a political component and a access to many more people. So I'm just kind of, it's all just kind of happening by accident, and it's just not anything that I had planned. But Chris is super supportive, and my job, my board of directors is really supportive. So that's all, it's all good. It's just happening very strangely. And I never would have expected it. I tell you that.
Right. No, I understand. Because I got, you know, I started the podcast, my whole journey, it's because of my son Ray, and he just turned 19. So I think we are kind of like in parallel lives right now.
Right.
So when were you aware that Jake has autism?
He wasn't diagnosed until, he was about 2 and a half when we enrolled in a 2-year-old, you know, pre-K kind of thing. Cause he was the only child. We were trying to get some, see how he was socially and that kind of thing. So he was about 2 and a half, and the nursery school or the pre-K program said, well, you know, he's got some sensory things, you know, maybe you should check, you know, because they can't diagnose, you know, they're teachers. And,
Right.
So we started with, we actually kind of went backwards. We started with OT before we had a diagnosis because we had to wait like a year and a half to get an actual doctor to tell us exactly what is going on. So we started with OT, and then like even when he was less than a year old, he would run a mile a day, 3 times a day, or a mile 3 times a day, pushing this little green thing. There's videos of it. You know, the green caterpillar things that the kids ride on that go, you know, this is a really, really old one, and it just had a little bucket to sit in.
Uh-huh.
So he flipped it around, and he held the handles like this and pushed it in front of him at 10 months old. And he would run 3 times a day. I would chase him. Like, I can't even, you know, it's crazy because he never walked. He, like, did army crawl, and then he ran. And now when I look back at it, I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at all the sensory that uh-huh. he's getting. He would always ride over the bumpiest parts of the road, ride over the gravel pits, and it would just vibrate. And uh-huh. so he was getting all that input, and I had no idea the whole, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was little. We got into the pet program, the intensive needs program at 3. So
okay.
that was good. Yeah.
Okay. So you said he was doing OT. And so for our listeners out there, OT stands for...
Oh, sorry. Occupational therapy. Yeah.
yeah.
Really, it's just to help our guys with autism become aware of their bodies in space and how their bodies move. And because it's really funny how they can not know, you know, I mean, it's yes. not funny, but it's very interesting how you have to teach that
uh-huh.
to them because of whatever, you know, disconnect is in their brain. You have to teach them that when they, I mean, Jake still doesn't know his strength. You know, when you hit the wall, your hand is going to go through, you know, like
mm-hmm.
it takes a long time for them to realize that and learn how their bodies move in space and what that feels like.
Right. So when mm-hmm. when you got the diagnosis, like how did you go about navigating through the autism world? I mean, was it your pediatrician helping to guide you? Did you go to like Kennedy Krieger or a place like that? Or
yeah, we had a lot of different things. We got a developmental pediatrician right away, but that was the one we had to wait a year for. Yeah. So there was one doctor that had, she was a regular she was developmental, but she didn't have a line. Like she was new and not really established yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to her just for the first diagnosis because we didn't want to wait 2 years. So we went to her, got diagnosis, signed up for this other doctor. So as soon as you had the paper with diagnosis, you could access stuff, you know? So mm-hmm. we were ready in OT, and then for like the end of his second year and then 3 years old and 4 years old, we were in the, it's called PEP here. It's PEP, intensive needs, PEP preschool education program. I think it's to get ready for kindergarten program for special needs kids. And
okay.
they had several different ones, and we were so lucky. Our teachers, they would come to the house. They did home visits every few weeks, and we would, when Jake, it was half day school, so I set up the other half of the day at school at home. So he would go on the bus, you know, to his half day, and then he'd come home and say they're learning about fire trucks or whatever, uh-huh. or firemen. And
right.
the teachers would, they would give me a whole bunch of other fireman type things. So I would set up school for him at home. And he, it got to where it was like he would do stations at school, he'd come home and eat, and then he would have stations at home where it was, you know, color the fire truck and how many little people are here, you know, that the firemen rescued, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. I worked really hard in the very beginning to mimic what they were doing at school. And then after the pre-K program, he went to a public school, but it was all inclusive. Like it had all kids with multiple disabilities in it.
Okay.
So he was in another just completely very different population. Everybody had a different diagnosis there. So he
okay.
was there until third grade. And then in third grade, I always say that the kids start getting their own ideas in third grade, and they're big enough to make sure they get their way, you know, in third
mm-hmm.
grade. Like
mm-hmm.
that's when he knew what he wanted and he knew what he liked and didn't like and was able to tell us. And when he didn't get his way, it was usually a physical outburst. So he broke the windows of the school with his bare hands, the plate glass, trying to gain the attention of another student that didn't really know he existed, but he really wanted to play with her. And
oh.
he bashed his hands through. So then that was how we got into Kennedy Krieger.
Oh, okay.
So I would say you have to go through hell to get to Kennedy Krieger or to a non-public placement. And you
right.
do.
No,
And we did. So we got into there at the end of our third grade year. And he was there all the way just up until ninth grade. And then
okay.
in ninth grade, you know, we had to make a really, really hard decision to send him to residential placement because it was getting to a point with all the funny things in his life that were happening. And he had a very strange upbringing just because of his advocacy and his public, you know, presence
mm-hmm.
that he got a lot of mixed messages and he had a lot of fear about not being perfect and not doing things right. And what's going to happen if he doesn't do things right. And it got to the point
okay.
where he would rather hurt himself or hurt me or hurt, break the house, instead of getting a consequence. He was too scared to, he was afraid of what would happen to him. He hates being in trouble. Yeah.
I get it. My son's kind of like that also. He's very rule oriented, very much into like protocols. So in, you know, we kind of would have to, when he was younger, we would have to tell him scenarios like of, you know, what to expect in this situation. And this is how you would handle this. And so it was a lot of like teaching him about emotional flexibility.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. To help guide the rigidity. Him. Yeah.
Yes. So that's hard. Right. Right. And that's so,
really tough.
Yeah. So, well, what challenges have you experienced? Can you share with that, you know, some of the challenges you've experienced? Because I, you know, I know that Jake is adopted, and so there's got to be like a mix of things that have gone on as well.
Yeah, I often say that our life is a social studies experiment, you know, two white parents with a brown baby, you know, we catch everybody's eye. And especially when he was little, you know, I was the nanny or I was the babysitter, or people would come right up to me. Like my favorite story, and from when he was really little, like a lot of folks would just say things to us that I was shocked, and I couldn't believe it. So I taught him that, you know, we needed a way to shut people down politely, not what was going through my head. Like, it's none of your business.
Right.
So I taught him to say, hi, pretty lady. And it, 'cause it was always, well, more often, moms, other moms that were critical of me, I was told I didn't know how to raise a child that was brown.
What?
I was told because they're all so different, right? And I was disrespecting him because I didn't know what to do with his hair, and I better get with it because his hair was too dry, and white people shouldn't have brown babies. And I'm like, I just really, so when I felt that critical eye coming, he would say, oh, hi, pretty lady. And the one woman that I was thinking of, she just looked at me. She said, oh, baby daddy black, in the middle of Home Depot. And I said, Jake, he's like, hi, pretty lady. And then she was okay. You know, she's like, oh yeah. And I said, no, actually, nope. He's white, you know?
What?
And
oh that just, my gosh.
You know, I'm thinking of Jake's daddy. Is my husband, and he's white.
Right.
So,
right.
That, you know, right. And I just didn't owe her an explanation, but it's, it's very shocking. You know, the whole hair thing, it was really a really big deal. And I'll never forget our bus driver. When Jake was in like first grade or second grade, he wanted his hair long because he wanted it curly and he loved it curly. And so we let it go, you know, we conditioned and washed, we did everything we're supposed to do. But then it got to a point where it was just really super thick, and I didn't know what to do with it. And whereas many moms were super critical of me, our bus driver was a barber, a master barber. And he pulled up to the house one day and to get Jake for school. He goes, honey, do you want some help? And I said, for what? He goes, you want help with his hair? And I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, you're actually offering me help instead of being mean. Thank you. Yes. Oh, I want
right.
He came over like the next weekend with his clippers and every tool in his little bag. And he taught me how to cut his hair and how to shape it and how to condition it and how to pick it up and how to do everything.
That's so nice.
I'm like, that's the way you help people. You don't cut them down.
You don't offer. Judge,
yes.
You know?
Yep. So he was wonderful. So that's a really defining moment for us. Jakey was adopted, and there's, you know, there's history, you know, his biological parents are around and not exactly safe. So our last, you know, we're very anonymous. My last name is not out there. Jakey's last name, you know, we don't use our last name in public, because we're kind of right in plain sight, and Jakey's on the internet. You know, if you look him up, pages come up, you know, so we're careful, and, I wish we didn't have to be. But to protect him, we do. And that's just, you know, that's just our case. You know, many birth parents are all different, you know. So So that's kind of a hard thing. I mean, we still get comments now and again, but it's not as bad as when he was little. And one person actually at a play group one time, because like I said, at 9 months, he was running, you know, we were running and it was all his sensory system was messed up. And we were accused one time of, because we would go to a play group in the neighborhood for 20 minutes and that's all he could manage. And then we would go run for 20 minutes and then we would come back for 20 minutes. And he was very young, like not even a year, maybe 11 months at this point. And one of the parents accused me, because he was very big, and accused me of lying about his age, because he was so agile and athletic at this early age that I was lying about his age because I wasn't really there when he was born anyway.
Wow.
It's amazing. Oh, and then someone else crazy. Said that he does it. He runs all the time because he's Kenyan and all Kenyans run. And I'm like,
are you serious?
And I live in a very diverse area. Like, you know,
right.
So it's really, those are the really funny, you know, now I can laugh at him. I was totally stunned at the time, you know, but, you learn as you go through, and, different parts of the country are different, you know, depending on where, like when we go home to Wisconsin, two white parents with a child that's brown is an eye catcher now still, you know, like it's just not a normal thing.
Sure.
Up in Maryland, it's very common now, you know, but like,
yes,
there's some parts of the country where, you know, it's just not.
Correct.
But yeah. I mean, it's always interesting everywhere we go.
Yeah. And as if there wasn't already enough like bias out there, having a child who has autism. So it's like, you know, like double whammy on you, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I used to, right now I was telling him, I'm like, you have like the trifecta. He's an adolescent. He's autistic. He's African-American. What else? What other challenges do we need? Bring them, you know?
Well, but it makes them stronger. And so speaking of that, you know, thinking about that, why don't you talk to us about your accidental ambassador and his amazing accomplishments?
Yeah, accidental is what I use. It because this all happened totally by accident. The story goes, it was February, and he was 12, I think. Yeah, 12. And we had come home from school, and he had left something in the car. I think it was his book bag, but he like had come home and was playing, and then went to change his clothes. And halfway through changing his clothes, he's like, "Oh my gosh, I have homework!" And you know, they can't just say, "Oh, I'll get it late." You know, they go to get it, right? There's no delay.
Right.
So he ran up to the car to get it, and it was cold. It was February. It was like 15 or 20 degrees.
Gosh.
And he was in the middle of changing clothes, so he was in his underwear only. And he ran down the driveway to get his stuff, and he's going, "Help, help." And he was really being silly because he was freezing, and he's like, "Oh, help." And my neighbors didn't know what to think because I am home often with him. My husband travels for work at times. So they didn't know if I was home in the house dead or if he was hurt. Or if I was just, you know, needing medical attention for some reason. So they all called the police. And so, you know, a bunch of police come to the house. And it was our first experience of really having that call happen. And he was really, really scared. He wouldn't even come downstairs. He was too afraid. So we had to kind of talk him into it. And that's when we realized how much body language and police stuff really matters, because no matter how small you are, when you have on your vest, your bulletproof vest and all your weapons and all your stuff, your belt, you look big, right? So he was scared to begin with, even though one of them was very, very nice. He was super nervous just looking at him. And then I had called, we had just recently met Officer Lori, who is in charge of the autism and IDD program for the Montgomery County Police. So I had called her and I said, "Hey, you know, we just had our first experience and, you know, keep up the training. You know, this one guy was really, really nice, but the other one, not quite. Could have used some help, you know," kind of stuff. And she wanted to be sure that Jakey had a positive experience with the police. So she came over and we were talking in the driveway and, you know, he is in the car flipping the lights on, you know, doing all the fun things you can do with a police car. And then she said, "You know, Jakey, if this ever happens again, just tell the truth. Always just tell the truth." And he said, I can't tell the truth. And she said, what do you mean? He said, I can't tell the truth if I'm scared. And that you could like see the light bulb. And she said, wow, we need to tell that to everybody. The recruits need to know this. Everybody needs to know this, that, you know, because she was doing training. And then it was a few weeks after that, and we were coming up on an event that we have in the summertime, Autism Night Out. And they had, she said, I think Jakey should give a speech for Autism Night Out. And so that was his first time doing this big public, like a police public speaking kind of thing, because he had spoken once before about special ed, and that was a hit, you know. So anyway, he did this speech, and TV covered it, and it became a much bigger thing than it was. And then it was a few months after that that the Obama administration had announced their Champions of Change program, and where they're finding people, you know, that are agents of change in the community, and they happen to have one on a partnership with police and youth. I was at the beach, and Lori called. She's like, oh yeah, one of my bosses told me about this program, and you know, they think we should apply. Can I just apply and see what happens? I'm like, oh yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, thinking Homeland Security, like right. I'm like, okay, whatever, you do that, when we get home. And lo and behold, he was a finalist, and they did it, and he was one of seven teenagers with a police partner to receive this award at the White House, the Champions of Change Award.
And, oh my gosh.
It was crazy. It was completely crazy. And then, so if that's not like really cool, it was his 13th birthday. So the weekend of his 13th birthday, he got that award. He turned 13 and met the Pope on the same weekend. Like,
wait, are you serious?
So that's where a lot of the TV stuff came in, because it was crazy. Like who gets an award from the vice president and then meets the Pope? And
how did he meet the Pope?
Was because of my special needs ministry connection, right? Because I we're Catholic, and
yeah, okay,
I have connections with the Archdiocese, and I work with adults with special needs. So we were taken, we couldn't go to the Mass, it was just too much, you know, when the Pope was here, it was too stimulating. So they had one little bus, and they said, will you be on the bus with these adults that go to where the Pope stays when he's here?
Okay.
Papal Nuncio, I think it's called. We were in the driveway when he pulled up, and so all of us were screaming, you know, and I told my husband, I said, there's one man that can make me weak in the knees. And I was just like, oh my God, completely starstruck. And Jakey was screaming, and all the kids were yelling. So he touched his hand as he was hugging the guy in front of us, and he got a rosary. He literally, after that, we were shot, because it was a really big weekend, and we were so tired. And then he goes, well, what do we do for my next birthday?
And I'm like, how do you beat that?
I'm like, yeah, I'm good, but I am not that good. I cannot beat the vice president and the Pope. So that just, you know, then everyone kind of discovered him. You know, he ended up with like national TV coverage, because this is just a crazy thing, you know, for anybody. And then he started doing more speeches and more trainings, and was working with Pathfinders for Autism here in Maryland. Uh-huh. And so he's taught about 3,000 police.
Does he get nervous? I mean, everything you've told me, I mean, with his speaking engagements.
Yeah, it's funny, but it just comes out in a different way. He gets more nervous now than he used to. I think because when he was younger, he could get away with more. Like the line of, yeah, it's really cute when you're little, but then when you're old, it's criminal, right? Like the stuff. So when he was younger and he was a little bit smaller, and he would have all the cadets on the floor doing push-ups with him, and they would do whatever he said, like, let's do push-ups, you know, and let's do jumping jacks. He had the whole class up doing jumping jacks, or he would be laying on the floor. Like, so his stuff would come out in many funny ways, not like I'm terrified to go speak, but antsiness and hyperactivity and not being able to stand still and raising his voice. He would yell a lot. And that, you know, all of the trainings, you know, while it was a perfect learning experience for the police to see what autism behavior looks like, it all was very hard, because even though he would have these behaviors, he would get a standing ovation no matter what. So that's the mixed message. Then he would come home and be silly and do that. I'm like, yeah, no, that doesn't fly here. And then he'd go to school and do the same thing. And they're like, yeah, no, that doesn't fly here either. So he was getting all these confusing messages, you know? So while it was very, very valuable and very important and still is, there was a time there when he was just very, very confused and didn't know what he could do. And if he did one thing here and not here, you know, he was getting, so,
That's a lot for anybody, you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. That is a lot. And he had to you know, be more mature at that
right.
age,
and
right?
that, yeah. And expectations are a really big thing he struggles with, which is why part of the reason where he is, where he is, because he would feel like, you know, and a lot of people would say, well, you're representing the police, you know, when you're in public. So you got to behave, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And people don't realize the pressure that put on him and the expectations that put on him. So he kept feeling like he was afraid that he couldn't meet expectations and what would happen to him if he didn't, because he's aware that he has dark skin. He's aware that there's racism. He knows stuff, just enough stuff to be dangerous, you know, he doesn't fully understand it, but he thinks that, I mean, and he says it in one of his speeches that if he says, I'm just your average good looking teenager, but if I had a meltdown on the street, you would want to shoot me.
Oh,
and he says that right to the police. And they're like, whoa. And it's not completely wrong, because he'll come across, you know, our kids will look like they're having a psychotic break or on some type of illegal drugs, and it's very hard to decipher, you know. So he's not completely wrong, but that he internalized that people with dark skin and people with light skin are treated differently, you know? And so that is a real big, it's a big stressor. And he's afraid of, you know, he thinks now that if he does something wrong, he's automatically going to jail because he's brown. You know, he knows just enough to be dangerous. He doesn't understand all of it, doesn't get all the pieces, but that's a big part of where he is right now at this school, where he's very, very protected and everything is very much the same. And he's kind of taken a break from speeches because he was hurting himself when he didn't meet expectations or when he thought he didn't meet expectations. So it was really, really hard. I didn't sleep for a few years, sleep, you know,
because
I was
afraid. It is a lot.
It is
a lot. I mean, for him to, you know, going to school and doing that and, you know, doing public speaking. I mean, he's accomplished a lot. I mean,
I know. I mean, he would hang with age. There's some senators that will always take a meeting with him, and the chiefs, you know, the police, he's buddies with, you know, that's our family. The police are our family here. So yeah, it is a lot. And especially like just for a neurotypical child to go to school half day and then go train 100 cops, you know, it's like, that's big. It's really big. So we're breaking a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I get it.
Well,
how did you go from TV news producer to blogging to being an advocate?
Well, the blogging is my outlet. And I was to the point where as I was learning more and more, and I knew people that were having kids behind me and asking questions, I'm like, man, I should just put this out there, you know, so more people can understand. And that all started before any of this stuff with Jake, his public speaking stuff started. I would just, I wrote stuff about adoption and those challenges and sensory stuff. I mean, I have all little topics broken out. Like every time I would learn something or every time I would need to dump something, that's where it would come out. And writing has always been an outlet for me. And, so, I mean, when I was writing the news, it was a job, right? And I would just write all day long and do the news, but then I missed the writing and then it actually became a tool for me. So I'm like, well, heck, I might as well just publish it and see what happens. And the first few that I wrote were very well received. And I was like, oh, wow. I was totally shocked. You know, I just thought I was sharing it with, you know, other moms that might need help. And it ended up around the world and like all this nuttiness, but, So it just kind of took off. And right now, like the last couple of years have been really, really hard. We don't reveal everything, but I've revealed a lot. And it's usually the articles that are very raw that I just sit down and I write them and then I hit send. And then I go back and read them the next day and I cry then because it's really weird. It's like a physical, and it's the same with Jake. Ironically enough, it's like a physical transportation of stress. It comes out my fingers and I write it. And then I feel better, you know, it's gone out of my head. And then the advocate part, like I had said before, like it just, since I do share a lot, I was kind of out there a little bit. And then I was working for an advocate, an education advocate, where I learned a lot about a lot of the different schools and a lot of different needs and how to assess a student. And then I was approached again by the Archdiocese. And they said, oh, hey, do you want, you know, there's this job and it's for you. And I'm like, I have like three jobs. I really can't. And they're like, no, really, this is your perfect job. It really is. And it ends up, it's the job I have now. They were right. I fought it as long as I could.
Okay. This is Up County Community Resources, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep. So that was like 6 years ago, how I ended up with this job. And it just ended up that, you know, we do an annual advocacy day in Maryland and, you know, we all go up together. And my experience with Jake has led me to really feel and see the holes in our system. Mm-hmm. And in every state system, there's holes, right? I mean, Maryland's actually pretty good. But, you know, now that we've had to have the emergency placement into the emergency hospital, there's a major hole there. And I'm like, it's not okay to have one hospital for autism kids and people with major mental health issues to have one hospital in a whole state. And especially the autism unit there has 6 beds.
So that's it?
Yeah. 6.
6.
So that's why,
and it's
people,
like,
you can't, and 1 in 50 kids has autism. And
exactly,
I'm pretty
right?
Sure,
yeah.
Like, everyone's going to go through puberty, which is when things get really hairy and things completely flip over. And that's not enough. And it's not good enough. And especially with the rise in autism diagnoses.
Sure.
That's, I just started griping and I had access to the right people. So I ended up, you know, getting placed on the Lieutenant Governor's Commission studying behavioral health, mental and developmental health in the state. So every time we have a meeting, I am griping about the fact that we need to do better and we need to do more. And then the police piece of this has allowed me access to the police and powers that be to tell them this is what we need here. And look at these families are all having trouble and people can't be afraid to call the police when their kids in crisis, you know, so I kind of have feelers into a lot of different little projects and slowly trying to fix things. You know, I can't obviously do it single-handedly, but how my job has been able to put me in positions where I can access people that can make change.
You know?
And that will listen to me for a little while anyway. I don't need long to tell them what we need, you know?
And that's important. Like you said, being an agent of change, you're taking a challenging situation and you're trying to affect a change for the better, right?
Yeah, because I just don't feel like it's fair. I think it's our responsibility to help the people coming up behind us, right? Like to make the world better before, you know. So it's very natural for me. We have a great story. Jake has been through many, many very scary situations and has had to rely on the state for help. And that was a disaster, you know? So, and I have parents, I have many hundred families, several hundred families that call when their adult is having trouble and they're afraid to call the police, and I'll text my police friends and then they'll go because they're afraid to call 911. They're afraid they'll be taken and all that needs to be fixed. So, you know, I kind of worked somehow, you know, the police commission here is new and starting to reimagine what the police force does in the community here. And I am a new commissioner onto that group. So there's a lot that can happen. And hopefully a lot does happen to make change because it just needs to be better. People shouldn't be having to fight so hard for the services that everybody else can just take for granted, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So what do you do at Up County Community Resources? What do they do there?
Well, we provide programming and job training, social experiences for adults with disabilities. So before, you know, pre-COVID, we were doing job training in grocery stores, in public retail shops, and in restaurants. And that was great. You know, we were teaching our friends the skills that they need to get a job. It's hard enough to get a job, but if you're a nonverbal or low verbal person looking for a job, it's really, really slim. So we just started teaching these skills, and everybody can go through each little part of the program, and we keep a resume for them. So we have a little rundown, and we check off everything that they can do. So if they can go to a job interview, say at a restaurant, and just show their book that says they can roll silver, they can polish glass, they can do a place setting, they can do, it's all right there for them. So we're trying to equip them with the tools to get a job in whatever area they are interested in.
Okay.
So, and we also provide respite on the weekends. We have three different respite programs for all the varying needs. We have low to no verbal folks that come to, it's a 4-hour program, and each program has a specific curriculum where they're not just going to sit and watch movies and listen to music. They're learning how to tolerate undesired task completion. You know, they're trying new foods. They're doing essential oils.
Okay.
And trying to learn new ways to manage and regulate themselves. And then the next.
Is it kind of like you have applied behavioral analysis, like therapist there? Or
No, I mean, that is a little bit of my background. So I designed the curriculum that way. But I am.
Well, I'm not surprised. Oh my gosh. You're in everything.
So I have an amazing staff though, too. I mean, all of my staff are special ed teachers. They're all master's level or more with experience. Okay. So I'm very, very lucky. So the respite programs are all run by those folks. And we build the curriculum together. So there's a fitness component. There's a food component, a communal eating component. Well, there was. We're still redoing.
Right. We're in the pandemic right now. So
And there's some independent living skills, and there's communication skills, and there's job skills. So like it rotates around each month, and we have many different areas. And then for our folks that are a little bit more profoundly impacted, we have therapeutic art and therapeutic music, which is run by certified therapists.
Okay.
Once a week. And then we have social skills, large group and small group social. So the small group is folks that have never really been dropped off in the community and their parents left. Like they've never been alone with just a friend in the community. So those are small groups led by a social worker. Okay. It's like 5 or 6 guys that are just kind of spreading their wings to be out with the guys, you know, like everything that we do, you know?
That's nice.
Yeah. And so they go bowling, and then they have pizza, or they play cards. And so we have like one for folks that are a little bit lower verbal where they don't need to communicate. They can bowl. You don't have to talk. They can do putt-putt. You don't really have to talk. So there's an opportunity for them to come once a month. And then the other one may be playing cards and talking about girls, you know, so then it'll be the more verbal guys that come to that one, you know. And then our large group is once a month, huge events. I have a board member who, one of our founding members, is a mom, and she has a daughter, an adult daughter with Down syndrome. So they take hundreds of people to sporting events, and we have dances for like 200 people. And we do lots of activities. We'll go to like a restaurant, all eat dinner together, and then go to a musical or a live theater program. So we do that once a month. So,
how cool is that?
I know it's.
We can't do it now, but
trying to make it so they can do everything that we can do. You know, nobody should be restricted.
Yeah.
From live theater just because they can't talk, right?
Right.
They enjoy the music as much as we do.
Right. I mean, how does one enter into your program?
Like, oh, there's really no specific thing. You send me an email, or you get on the email list, and everybody's welcome to come to everything. There's some of them, like the therapeutic stuff has a little bit more of a fee because those are a little bit more pricey, but they're still very reasonable for having a certified therapist teaching the class. Like a lot of things are $20 and less to take part. We're very supported by Montgomery County government. We're very lucky, and I just apply for every grant that comes across my desk and beg people for money.
That is so cool. I don't think we have that in Howard County. I haven't heard.
No, you don't. We have it. It's kind of funny because it's called the community resources model. There's one in Potomac, and then I'm up county, and there's a Prince George's County. There's Brookland, which is down in DC. And there's a Hispanic community
program.
Howard, it doesn't, we're not to Howard yet. We, you know, you just got to find a person and, you know.
Yeah, you need to come to Howard County.
People come to our stuff from all over the place. You know, we have people driving down from Frederick, people coming up from Potomac. A lot of the same people do a lot of the same stuff. Like you'll see someone at this dance and then the next dance. Oh, I just saw you. Yeah, I know it's needed. It's needed everywhere because we just need these, our folks need these opportunities and it's only fair. You know, we deserve to have these experiences too. So
yeah, that is wonderful. That is so cool. Well, you know what? I think having a support system is so helpful for a parent trying to navigate through the autism world. I mean, we have our husbands, but I've, aside from my husband, I've got this one friend / mentor and she's, you know, someone I can always, you know, count on. I can always call her when I need advice and I have questions or I'm just worried about something.
Yeah.
So I've heard you've got a friend like that too.
You've heard.
So yes. Can you share with us your story about Grandma Stacia?
That's another complete accident. And that's how like much of my life is like, you know, kind of kismet, you know, and I always say that, you know, I don't want to get too churchy, but Jakey, God has had his hand on Jakey since the beginning. And these things, there's no way I could have as a person planned this or caused this to happen. There's no way. But when I was working for the Weinfeld education group, we were having a conference and Eustacia Cutler was coming in to be the guest speaker. And I was the person that was to pick her up at the train station and entertain and go out to eat.
Oh, wait, hold up. Yeah. Hold up. Wait, you have to tell everybody who Eustacia Cutler is because.
I guess people know the name, you know, Temple Grandin and Eustacia is her mom.
Yeah, that is so cool.
you know, it's just, you know, we had our signs at the train station, you know, Cutler, you know, and I was a nervous wreck, a total nervous wreck. And I was going to do whatever she wanted. I was terrified. And we're driving her home and I was going to bring her to her hotel and she didn't want to really just go and sit by herself. So we hung out, we went to dinner, we talked, we sat here in my living room and I'm like, is this like seriously my real life right now? The house was a mess. I was terrified. My dog was jumping all over her. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. and then so she, you know, she did the conference. She was wonderful. I got to introduce her, which I also, my knees were shaking. But we really hit it off. She was also interested in Jake because, you know, the racial piece of our lives and how that all intertwined with getting services and all of that stuff. So we became, you know, buddies during that trip. And then it was just shortly before that, we had lost my mother-in-law. So Jakey was in the car with us, taking her back to the train station. And he said, you know, Grandma Stacia, my grandma died. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know? And he said, I could use a grandma. Can you just be my grandma?
Just like that. He says that.
Yeah. He's from the back seat, you know, and this little bitty voice, I'm like, oh man, that did not just happen. And it did. And she said, well, if I was your grandma, what would you call me? And he said, well, it would be Grandma Stacia. Like, duh. You know, like it was just came right out. It was so funny. And she said, I like the sound of that. Yeah, I'll do that. You know? And since then, she's my first call when I'm really losing my mind. And it's always very reassuring for her to say, oh, Temple did the same thing, you know, or this is what happens. Or I learned this from our doctors. You should try this with your, you know, everybody needs that person. And
yeah.
I mean,
I think so. It really helps.
You know, there's other folks, you know, that I'm friends with that are ahead of me, you know, in the field and stuff, but Stacia has that mom piece, you know, we, you know, can have a glass of wine on the phone and just laugh. Like there's not many people I can tell everything and have them not react. But nothing really phases her anymore, you know, too much, you know, there's a couple things that have surprised her, but she's like, oh, it totally makes sense. Like when she would think of, when we think about it, it just made sense. And so, yeah, so she's wonderful. And And yeah, it's one of those things.
Does she still do speaking engagements, or
she's stopped traveling before, you know, a couple years ago? It just got to be a lot. But she does it like this. She does a lot of Zooms and a lot of Skypes, and you know, we'll still do conferences and that kind of thing if you're okay taking it over, you know, over the airwaves, yeah. I guess. So yeah, I mean, you just need someone smarter ahead of you, and she's really smart and she's ahead of you.
That is so cool.
It's nuts. Yeah. It's nuts.
Well, how can our listeners find you? Contact you?
Well, I'm pretty easy. I'm actually pretty easy to find and pretty much an open book. If you are in the area and you want like services or assistance with your young adult, then you could probably go through my the Up County Community Resources. Okay. That website, you can email me directly through there, ucresources.org. Or there's ways to get me through a couple other websites, The World According to Jake, where I write the blog. You can send messages through there. And that there's also a Facebook page for the blog. And Empowering Autism Caregivers is how we do our speeches and how Jakey can be compensated without being penalized. My LLC gets paid for him to do an appearance or for me to do a speech. So that way is pretty easy too. You know, you can, I'm out there. I'm all around, probably more than I like.
Cool. Yeah. So what words of wisdom would you like to share with us?
Words of wisdom. This is for younger moms, right? With youngers?
Yes. Yes. I think that'd be helpful.
I just think what I see and what I have seen and what I have talked about in a lot of speeches or little classes that I do is, number one, it's not about you. And a lot of people, their ego is involved. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. It's just, it's human nature. You know, you want your kid to behave and do well, right? But sometimes you have to take your ego out of it, and behavior is communication. No matter what they're doing, you know, if they're putting their hand through the wall or, you know, or kicking their sister, you know, there's something that they're not able to verbalize that's bothering them. And I'm a big, find the root of that communication, because it may look like something completely nonsensical to you and just be irritating to you, but there's a reason. And there's a lot of people have a hard time with that. They think, oh, they're just misbehaving. Most of the time it's for some reason. They're overwhelmed or overstimulated or something. I totally told you the lawnmowers were going to come out. Can you hear them?
I can vaguely hear it. You're good.
Oh my God. Okay. So, and the other thing is like the discipline piece, just be positive and just redirect. I love to say, don't shame them to shape them. And, you know, because that's doing nothing. Criticizing them is doing nothing but hurting their self-esteem.
I like that. Don't shame them.
Yeah, don't shame. And then I heard it another way. Someone else told me, connect with them before you correct them.
Huh, that's cool.
So I love that.
Yeah, I like that.
And I'm stealing it from my friend. It's a great one. And just really just try to be in tune with what they're doing. And don't be so hung up on what they look like in the store or in the school play. If they're the only one moving around, who cares? They're getting through it, you know?
And, exactly.
They're doing what they need to do to regulate their body. So I guess that's it. You know, we always were very positive, and I'm not saying I'm the perfect parent, because I have said things too that have hurt Jakey. Every parent, when you're in the heat of it, you're like, ah, but, it's important. It's important. If that's one little bit of advice I can tell people behind me, that's it. Just stay really positive and think about the root of their behavior, because that's a hard one. It's really hard.
That's great advice. And you know what? I should have said it's for moms and dads with younger kids. That's helpful advice. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. It's a challenge, but these guys are all here for a reason, and there's value. Every life has value. So we just got to find what that is. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thanks, Jen, for sharing your story, knowledge, and helping to educate and empower us. Oh, thank you.
I hope so. I'm honored that you even thought to have me. So thank you.
It's great to have you. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.